Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. A hearing-impaired man of Ethiopian descent is suing a Virginia sheriff over a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act in a case of police mistreatment that has garnered international attention. Mr. Abraham Zemera Gegehu was jailed by the Arlington County Sheriff's Department for 6 weeks after being arrested on suspicion of stealing an iPad. He is a U.S. citizen, but having been raised in Ethiopia, he uses Ethiopian Sign Language and American Sign Language, but does not have experience writing in English. Homeless at the time of his arrest, Mr. Zemera Gegehu had a bewildering and frightening experience, with no understanding of why he was being arrested and held for so long. The iPad in question was soon retrieved by its owner, and yet the hearing-impaired man remained in custody. Mr. Zemera Gegehu took a plea deal for a misdemeanor charge to obtain his release, even though he did not steal anything. My guest is Caroline Jackson. She's an attorney with the National Association of the Deaf who is representing Abraham Zemera Gegehu. Welcome to Uprising, Caroline.
Thank you so much.
Well, when it was determined that your client was hearing impaired, what sort of attempts did the Arlington County Sheriff make to communicate with him and let him know why he was being arrested and what his rights were?
They tried to write to him and explain that information to him. However, he doesn't read. And he tried to explain to him that he can't read and that he needed an interpreter. They never provided an interpreter, and because there wasn't one, he really doesn't know what else happened. He didn't understand anything that was going on.
Hmm. Well, when they determined that he couldn't write or understand written English, shouldn't they have tried to find an ASL interpreter, an American Sign Language interpreter? I understand instead they used a TTY machine, which is simply a device that lets people who are hearing impaired to or hard of hearing to communicate with each other in written text. But again, this requires you know written English.
Right. So they should have provided an American Sign Language interpreter, and he actually asked for one, making his request and his need for that even clearer. For the TTY device, actually, that is something that's used as a substitute for a telephone. Hmm. So they didn't try to use that to communicate with him, but they did try and offer it to him to use to place outbound telephone calls. But you're exactly right about the English piece. He needed to know English in order to use that to place and receive telephone calls, and he simply couldn't. And what's more, the overwhelming majority of deaf and hard of hearing individuals now don't use TTYs anymore. They use a video phone, which works much like Skype does now. If we were signing, we could see each other and we could communicate very clearly. And that's something that most deaf and hard of hearing people do use. But it's not something that the jail offered, and it was something that Mr. Zemera Gegehu needed.
At what point did he understand what was happening to him? I mean, he was incarcerated for 6 weeks. That's a long time. It's like I'm imagining being trapped in a country where I don't speak the language and nobody speaks the language that I do, and being incarcerated and being utterly confused and isolated and frightened and not knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah, he'd never been in trouble with the law before. He knew nothing about the processes that go on inside a jail. He spent 2 nights in jail before he had a court appearance with an interpreter. And it was at that court appearance, at his arraignment, that through the interpreter, he was informed of the charges against him. But he still didn't know about the procedures in jail. He still didn't know about all the subsequent court appearances, about all the other procedures that stood between him and his release. He thought it was a big misunderstanding that would be over in a couple days, and it wasn't.
Now, I understand that while he was imprisoned, he was given a tuberculosis test, and this is a test that requires being injected with something into the skin to see the reaction, and then he was also x-rayed. Is this standard procedure? Did he know what was being done?
So I do not personally know of standard procedure for the Arlington Sheriff's Department. However, I would not think it unusual for a confinement situation like that to involve tuberculosis tests at the outset to forestall an outbreak. But he didn't know what was happening. He just knew that they injected him with some mysterious substance.
Again, this can just be so frightening if you have no idea what's being done to you. I mean, as far as he knew, he might have been injected with something dangerous.
Yeah, as far as he knew, and nobody ever tied it together for him.
And I understand that he also went hungry often because he wasn't able to hear the alarm that was being rung for mealtimes, and authorities often didn't bother to tell him that it was mealtime, so he even starved periodically.
Yes, and in fact, it's even slightly worse than that.
Mm-hmm.
The way the facility worked is that when there was a mealtime, or as far as we know how the facility works, is when there's a mealtime, a buzzer or an alarm or something would ring that would let the inmates know that they could press a button that would open their cell door and then they could go. And if Mr. Zimenegege, who was not looking in the direction of the other cells at the time that the buzzer rang, maybe he was taking a nap, maybe he was just staring at his cell wall bored, if he didn't know that that's what happened, he would miss the mealtime. He would turn around or wake up and see everybody else's cell empty. But what makes it even worse is at that time, he would go push the button on his cell door and he would try and get out and they wouldn't let him out.
Now, the lawyers for the county sheriffs write that it would not, what they did not violate federal law because there is a rational basis for their discrimination. They said it takes extra resources and creates additional security considerations to bring an ASL interpreter into the facility. But isn't that the whole point of the Americans for Disabilities Act, that people with disabilities have the right not to be discriminated against in spite of the extra resources it takes to prevent the discrimination?
Exactly. The Americans with Disabilities Act is very clear that covered entities like the Sheriff's Department and the others named in the lawsuit have to do what it takes to make sure that deaf and hard of hearing people have effective communication and that other people with disabilities have the accommodations required for equal access. There are provisions if it's too expensive or it's too dangerous, the law allows for that. But actually, the Virginia Department of Corrections, which is another entity that we've named in the lawsuit, just 5 years ago signed a settlement agreement in which they agreed to provide sign language interpreters in a prison setting, which is even more dangerous than a jail.
Now, what is the how typical is the experience that Mr. Zimenegege who had across the country, not just something that might be happening in Virginia county jails, but in the prison system in general in the United States? How big is the deaf community and are their rights being respected under the ADA?
His story is all too common. His story is the story of being deaf and behind bars. And so for deaf individuals who are in prison, it's Mr. Zimenegege who's experienced all day, every day for the decades that their sentence lasts. It's very serious. There are efforts right now to improve this situation in prisons. For example, I referenced a settlement agreement reached with the Virginia prisons, and there's other ongoing litigation in several other states in this country. The deaf and hard of hearing population in prisons, it's actually nearly impossible to know how many there are, because when organizations such as ourselves ask these prisons, how many deaf and hard of hearing inmates do you have, they simply say they don't keep those records or they're not aware that they have any, and they have to be found person by person.
Wow.
There's an organization that is doing this work. It's called Helping Educate to Advance the Rights of the Deaf, Heard, and they've identified, I think, over 600 deaf and hard of hearing individuals in prison, but they know that that number is very, very low and that it's only scratching the surface.
So, Caroline, in addition to the rights of the deaf community with the inside prison walls, there's also the circumstances under which arrests take place, right? When somebody is being arrested, we have our Miranda rights. You know, we have to be read our rights to us. But I can't imagine, or I don't imagine, that most police officers, arresting police officers, are proficient in ASL.
Yes. They are most arresting officers. In fact, I can think of exactly one arresting officer in this country who is fluent in American Sign Language. And it's a very harrowing experience. There is litigation on this point. In fact, there's an ongoing case in New York City right now where a deaf individual called the police about her neighbor who had threatened her and who had fired shots. And when the police officers came onto the scene, they knew the caller was deaf. They did not provide an interpreter, and they chose to arrest the deaf woman who had called the police, as opposed to the man she had accused.
So in this case, they had advance notice that they would be communicating with somebody who was deaf, and they still didn't bother to bring somebody who was an ASL interpreter. Now, in the case of Mr. Zamira Gegehu, how much of a role do you think his race and nationality also played in his arrest and treatment? And I'm wondering if we know, of course, that there's racism in our criminal justice system particularly in law enforcement officials. This is an issue that's front and center in the media today. Mr. Zamira Gegehu, who is a man of African descent, Ethiopian man, he's dark skinned, dark haired, and he is deaf. Do you think that his race and nationality added to the biases that might have been at play?
It's possible. However, there's no direct evidence that we've seen that led to us to make that conclusion. The person who accused him of stealing the iPad set forth the basis for his belief to the police. So it wasn't really the police knowing an iPad had been stolen and picking the dark-skinned man. It was the police knowing of a particular person who had been accused. And so in terms of the reason for his arrest, we have at this point no reason to believe that race or ethnicity played a role. And within the jail setting, Mr. Zamira Gegehu, who has not mentioned anything where he believed or that gave us reason to believe that he was being targeted for those reasons. So fortunately, it seemed that at least that element was not a serious concern here.
Now, how is it possible that he remained incarcerated and was charged with a misdemeanor? He took a plea deal just so that he could get some, get his freedom back, even when the iPad in question was actually recovered. I mean, so what was stolen?
Well, according to the statements we've received from the prosecutor, the fact that an item has been recovered doesn't mean that it wasn't stolen in the first instance. However, the fact that it was recovered while Mr. Zamira Gegehu was being held incommunicado in a jail is pretty strong evidence that whoever stole it, it wasn't him.
Right. I mean, how was he going to arrange for an item that he supposedly stole to be then released? I mean, certainly I don't think we know necessarily what the circumstances of the loss and the retrieval of the iPad was. But was that fact that the iPad was recovered kept from authorities when he took his plea deal?
It's unclear. So the public defender who represented him has no recollection at all of being given this information. However, the prosecutor asserts that he did share that information with the public defender. So we really don't know. And right now our attention is not on the lawyers and how they handled it. It's on the jail facility and how they didn't honor his rights.
So tell us about the lawsuit that Mr. Zamira Gegehu is launching against the Arlington Sheriff. In addition to violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act, is he also asking for these charges to be dropped?
No, unfortunately, because he's pled guilty, we can't ask charges to be dropped. We have to take a different route.
So what is he asking for in terms of is he basically asking for damages for his treatment?
Yes, due to the nature of U.S. constitutional law, he is not in a position where he can ask for a policy change. That's always first and foremost on our mind in these kinds of cases, but because he can't show with sufficient legal certainty that he'll be ever rearrested, and he's a very law-abiding man, there's no reason to think that he ever will be rearrested, but because he can't show he'll be rearrested, he can't. Legally, he cannot ask them to change their policy. However, certainly it is our hope that there will be moments of education that come out of this lawsuit that prevent this from happening again.
Well, Caroline, how important is it to highlight such cases? Because it's not, of course, just the deaf community that is impacted by the lack of training among law enforcement and the county jail systems and prison systems, but of course, there is the broader disabled community at large, people with who do have rights under the ADA. I mean, we certainly have the ADA, which can be seen as a major measure of progress. But if it's not being enforced in these very important points of interaction between the state and individuals who are disabled, then what good is it?
I don't know. It's very concerning because to be deaf and in and interacting with the police is a terrifying experience because we know how the police treat people who can communicate with them.
Exactly.
Imagine how they treat people who can't. And we hear horror stories of how awful jails and prisons are. It's a special kind of hell if there's no one you can talk to.
Right. And we also know people who suffer from mental disabilities. We already know that that's a huge problem with authorities. And I'm assuming that mental disability is also covered by the ADA.
It is, and just yesterday, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case brought against
Right.
the city and county of San Francisco. So it's something, it affects everything. I mean, people in wheelchairs have a lot of lawsuits they have to bring because they're not able to leave their cells, or they're not able to bathe, or they can't leave the facility and go outside because of the presence of steps. And then something that can happen often with blind inmates is they need assistance to find their food, to navigate, et cetera, and often prisoners will be assigned to be, instead of getting a guard to assist them, the prison will assign another inmate to assist them and often make the assignment as punishment to that inmate for having done something wrong. So you
Wow.
can imagine how well that goes.
Wow.
It's a very serious situation that we very much need some intervention on.
Well, Caroline, are there any websites you'd like to share with our audience about this issue? You're with the National Association of the Deaf, and you mentioned another organization, HEARD.
Yeah, so the National Association of the Deaf, our website is www.nad.org. And then the organization HEARD is at www.behearddc.org. That's www.behearddc.org.
And we'll post those on our website, uprisingwithsonali.com, later today. Caroline, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you, Sonal.
My guest, Caroline Jackson, is an attorney with the National Association of the Deaf. She is representing Mr. Abraham Zamera Gyekyehu. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.